Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day J6 Hearing Eve Edition. And I got to find Fancy Brian. You're always right here with me, or at least technically in the Shaw. I got Evan with me here in the world headquarters, Madison, Wisconsin, Devil Radio. He'll be lightly screening your calls all day long at 844-967-2789. And I got to find Co-Devil right from the top. He is John Nichols from the Nation, from, you know, I'd like to think, friend of the devil. Welcome back, John.
I am a friend, and I am glad to be welcome back. Good to be with you, brother.
John, how do you anticipate watching the big hearing tomorrow night, or will you be listening to it right here on the radio?
I'd love to be listening to it on the radio. I'm doing commentary on it for a couple of different outlets, for Pacifica Radio and then for Al Jazeera internationally. And so I'll be watching it on, you know, screens and then be in front of computers for Skype hookups and stuff like that.
So, John, what are you expecting? I hate to have too high expectations, you know, but I'm looking for a summer blockbuster to rival Maverick.
Damn straight. That's exactly what you should be looking for. And to some extent, in the reporting I've done on preparation for it, that sounds a little bit like what it's going to be. It appears that the committee majority has brought in technical people because they're going to have a lot of production with this lengthy hearing on Thursday night. And that production will be aimed at creating a narrative so that people who are watching it can say, oh, okay, I get, you know, much more what's going on here. I have a much better perspective. And that narrative is apparently going to be aiming toward sort of a new language as regards what happened on January 6th, 2021. To not talk about it so much as an insurrection, which is a, you know, a good word, frankly, a pretty powerful word, but not a precise word, and more beginning to talk about it as a coup. And as a coup that was the result of a conspiracy at the center of which was Donald Trump. And if indeed that is the narrative that's developed, especially on the first night, and then they build around it going forward with a lot of evidence, I think these could be pretty powerful hearings.
John, coup-spiracy. You can use that, sir.
Thank you. I'll see where I can take that.
You know, I like to make up words around here. He is John Nichols. You know, he stays a little closer to the dictionary. But John, I get the difference because, you know, when we first saw the January 6, 2021, when we saw it happen in real time, I mean, we thought maybe Trump incited this riot, but we had no idea all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. And John, at first I thought this was a very straightforward case. You know, Trump went out there and he riled the troops and he sent them off for the attack. But this was a multi-pronged, multi-leveled. I mean, they were playing four-level chess conspiracy here, if you will, John. This was a very complicated scheme. And it was on multiple levels. And it does seem like Trump was at the center of the scheme, John. But how do you prove all that in a two-hour made for ADHD Americans?
Well, first and foremost, you don't do it all in that first 2 hours. You get your broad themes and you put them on the table so that people know where you're headed. And that's like any good person of any book, any movie, whatever, so that you've got a little bit of anticipation going. And then you begin to draw out your narrative to tell people, you know, the story as it developed. And so you don't have to do everything all at once. But what you do have to do is communicate the drama of what we're talking about here. Now, that's very hard to do if you have every member of Congress give a speech, right? Every member on the committee give a speech. And that's the great danger of this circumstance, right? You don't want to have a situation where it's like 20 speeches, you know, all talking about how great they are. You want to get to the heart of the matter. You want to get to the storyline quickly and effectively. And I think it's summed up in a statement that Jamie Raskin, the key progressive on the committee, made late last week when he was up in New England giving some speeches. He was asked, you know, how seriously do you think Trump was involved in this? And he said, I believe, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, I believe that Trump went to bed on the night of January 5th, 2021, believing that events that would transpire during the course of the next day would assure that.
Oh, no, John Nichols. John, let me slow you down for just a second, my friend, because you got to the punchline and we missed it. Trump just laying down in his bed, you know, the Ritalin just starting to wear off, John. And what happened then?
Then Trump went to bed convinced that events that would transpire the next day on January 6th, 2021, would overturn the results of the 2020 election and lead to a circumstance where he would continue his presidency through a second term. That Trump was so actively involved and so engaged with this conspiracy that he knew what was going to transpire the next day. Not every aspect, but he knew that there would, in fact, be immense pressure brought on the Congress through a storming of the Capitol, and that the point of this would be to overturn the results, the legitimate results of the election, and install him, assure that he would be able to continue as an illegitimate president. That's pretty dramatic stuff. That's suggesting something far deeper than what came out in the impeachment trial, something far deeper than frankly anything we've had up to this point. That is evidence that Donald Trump was an overseer of a conspiracy, an active participant in multiple aspects of a conspiracy that was directed toward a specific shift in reality, i.e. the overturning of an election. If that, what Raskin was talking about, if that is brought out and if that evidence is presented, that is going to blow the roof off everything, right? And is that going to make Ron Johnson change his opinion? No. Because you couldn't make Ron Johnson change his opinion, you know, with anything but money. But it has the great potential to have a real impact on that great mass of Americans that doesn't follow politics on a day-to-day basis, that isn't deeply involved in the nuances of, you know, Democratic and Republican positioning, that didn't read the Mueller report or anything like that. These are folks who get their political news from a quick radio rundown of headlines, but may occasionally tune into something that they think is a really big deal. And obviously that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the potential that a substantial portion of Americans, certainly not the great mass of everybody, but a substantial portion of Americans might finally conclude that Donald Trump did indeed conspire to thwart U.S. democracy. And if that happens, that moves the needle. It doesn't move it all the way. You're still going to have Trump, you know, rabid Trump defenders, and you're also going to have rabid Trump haters. Well, you're going to have a portion of people who are somewhat in the middle who move toward, we just can't let Trump have power again.
Well, John, let me point one thing out. They're not going to broadcast the January 6th hearings on Fox News. And that's obviously the number one cabled news. And in fact, if anything, they're going to propagandize and they're going to counter program. They're going to spin. They're going to roll out these glossy videos making, you know, these poor Trumpsters. They're being vilified. They're being persecuted. John, how do we overcome? And I'm literally going on Fox News this Sunday, and I don't care what they ask me about. I'm talking about January 6th. But, John, how do we overcome the lack of coverage from the right? If they're going to pretend like it didn't happen, John, aren't their audiences not going to know what happened?
Yep. It's just going to be the case. You know, that is a fundamental reality, that there are going to be some folks who are not going to tune in to the storyline, and who wouldn't, even if you gave them all the evidence, accept the storyline, right? That's, you know, a practical reality of American politics and of American media life, and you aren't going to change that no matter how desperately you might want to. Now, you personally will change it on Sunday, and you know that'll,
yeah, it'll be me, John. I feel quite confident.
It'll be the pivot point for American politics. History books will be written about it. But on the chance that that isn't the case, that's not what we're really talking about. Because you're right, Fox is the most watched cable news program. But what percentage of the American people watch it?
It's relatively small. It's 5 million people a night, something like that.
Yeah, so at its peak, you're talking about 1.5, maybe 2% of the American people, right? So basically, I'm working on the other 98%.
John, I mean, will it help to have Liz Cheney? I understand Liz Cheney will be a big part of the first night. We're probably about a minute and a half to break here, John. But Liz Cheney, your thoughts on her on the lead?
Yeah, you got to give her a platform. She is the Republican who's there, and the notion, any notion whatsoever, that this is a bipartisan committee, has to give her and Adam Kinzinger some position in which to raise issues and to talk about them. And frankly, I think she and Kinzinger are pretty reliable on their critique of Trump and on their critique of Trump's wrongdoing and that of those who are around him. So I think in that case, that's fine and probably be pretty effective. I'm just hoping that they also have Jamie Raskin out front, because Raskin, of course, the great constitutional scholar, is really brilliant at putting these pieces together as well.
John Nichols, hold that thought. Come back with me. One more segment with John Nichols from The Nation. He's co-devlin to start this big Wednesday, the Hump Day J6 Hearing Eve Edition. More with John Nichols and yours truly, and Fancy Brian and Evan.
I know you got to be frustrated. I can taste it.
I want somebody's butt. I want it now. I've had it.
I can taste it.
The devil's advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. I got a fine wingman. He's co-devlin. He's John Nichols from The Nation. John, appreciate you sticking around. You know, I want to talk a little backyard politics for just a minute, John. We got a little challenge to the Trump-endorsed gubernatorial ballot, or at least the effort to qualify for the ballot from the rich guy from Connecticut, Tim Michaels. John, what do you think of the Democrats' efforts to, you know, kick him off the ballot for, you know, apparently not following the rules, for making a rookie error? It could be a very costly error, couldn't it, John?
Well, it could be, although, I mean, I actually think it makes Tim Michaels look good. And I'll tell you why. He put a Wisconsin address on there. You know, if he's screwing up on his address, it could well have been a Connecticut one.
Or a New York one.
So, or a New York one, or some, you know, wherever else he's got one of his many homes. And so, in that regard, you know, more power to Tim that he recognizes he is, in fact, running in the state of Wisconsin. Although, like all of Trump's choices, or most of them, he's somebody who doesn't come from the place that Trump wants to elect him. And we should always remember that. With that said, I have to be a little bit skeptical about this challenge. I think the Wisconsin Elections Commission is going to back up Tim Michaels on this one and let him be on the ballot, because the error is a technicality. It is listing your voting address, which makes sense to list when you're doing petitions, you're running for office, as opposed to his mailing address. And he lives in a village, you know, that's next to Heartland, and listed one rather than the other. But it's the same street address, et cetera. And my sense is his lawyers will make the case that this is, you know, it's a legitimate small error and not one that should be disqualifying. And I happen to believe that in the state of Wisconsin, one of the best things about our state is that we have erred historically on the side of saying that if you make a legitimate effort, if you get your signatures, you probably have a place on the ballot. And one of the things I'll point out is that Republicans, as I understand it, are challenging Patty Shatner's petitions for her assembly race out in western Wisconsin for the same exact error, right? That, you know, she listed a voting address as opposed to a mailing address on the cover page of a petition. And so at the end of the day, well, again, I think Tim Michaels is a pretty comic figure. And, you know, it's it's certainly notable that he's not particularly familiar with his proper address. My bet is that he'll come out. You know, we will probably have a chance to vote for or against him come August and maybe even in November.
John, do you think Michael's entree, or at least the Trump endorsement of Michael's, that's really shaken up that race, I suspect. And I wonder if Clayfish, who apparently has that, you know, that village, township, multiple address thing, she apparently got hers right. And she's been silent to date on this Michael's ballot issue. But you got to think she's kind of rooting against the guy right now, don't you, John?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's the primary beneficiary of this. If in fact you were thrown off the ballot, right? That would be, you know, fantastic for Clayfish, because she would end up in a situation where, you know, she might again emerge as the front runner. Although I think she had problems with Kevin Nicholson as well, and so I'm not sure she wins even then. But yeah, it would be tremendously beneficial to her. Be a huge embarrassment to the Republican elites that have, to some extent, united around Michaels, and that's Trump and some of the other folks here in Wisconsin. But I will tell you this, Michaels, that was a rookie error, without a doubt. And maybe he would make more of them, but he's got a lot of money. He has an image that I think he is presented reasonably effectively. And so I do think he's probably the strongest Republican challenger to Tony Evers of the group.
No, I agree with you, John. And so, I certainly
so
think
it's not just Clayfish that would benefit if he got knocked off the ballot. It's Evers would benefit as well.
Hmm. Interesting take. John, we're going to have the Democratic Party chair, Ben Wickler, on tomorrow's big show. Sort of a January 6th preview. John, how about the Senate race? Are you seeing anything new? I know Mandela Barnes is out with some ads now. I know the two other very wealthy participants, Godlewski and Lasry, have been up with ads. And I think Tom Nelson's been kind of clever. Did a little polling joke earlier this week, you know, the outcome of the Nelson family picnics got him at 95%, John. So anyways, I know the campaigns are out there on the hustle. John, does any of it matter? Do people care during the summer primary season, or, you know, whoever's the front runner, are they the beneficiary of all the summer vacations?
Well, yeah. I mean, a little bit of summer vacation is a factor, but remember that the people who vote in the Democratic and Republican primaries, you're not going to have a lot of crossover this time, because you got a good Republican primary for governor, you got a good Democratic primary for the Senate. So people are going to go into their primaries, and the highly engaged people in both parties, I think, are basically doing the same thing, which is looking for who is best positioned to win that critical race. And so Democrats, I think, no matter who's front runner in a particular poll, their first and essential question is who can beat Ron Johnson. And that means that any of the front runner, the four or so candidates who are in the lead or in higher level in the polling, any of them could, if they make the most effective case, end up taking off as a candidate. Similarly, on the Republican side, I think of the three significant candidates, any of them who can make the most effective case that they could beat Evers could take off. I say all that, long way of answering it, to a simple point, and that is that I think these races are still up for grabs.
You know, John Nichols, I heard you completely dismiss the candidacy of Tim Brantham. Kind of sad.
Tim, you know,
big liar bust, baby.
I'm not the dismisser here. That's Donald Trump, man. Donald Trump. Rantham gave a lot of love, really kind of, you know, went for it. And what did he get out of his buddy Donald Trump? Nothing.
Well, you don't know, John. Maybe he took him furniture shopping. John Nichols, ooh, always appreciate when you come around, sir.
Nah, I guess I am here to hear these witticisms and insights from you, and I greatly appreciate it.
Take care, John. More Devil's Advocates.
All right, brother.
We'll be right back.
You can be my wingman anytime. Oh, you can be mine.
Yeah! I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping.